Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. For this episode, I am joined by Rory O'Connor. You might know him on social media as Rory Stories. He's Irish, he's brilliant. He's written 3 best-selling books. His latest book is called Rory's Story, and it's a much more personal book than the ones that went previous. He's a comedian, and he has a very, very inspiring story of going from a place of real lows and self-doubt to being at a place now where he's selling at venues around the country. He's got these best-selling books. He's incredibly successful. But none of that is without the constant presence of self-doubt, which I think is a source of anxiety for so many people listening, myself included. Imposter syndrome, questioning our worth. So Rory shares his story with me, how he handles the waves that come at him where he feels low, how he rides those waves, and what he does to combat that inner critic, which we're all so familiar with. I hope you find this helpful, and Rory's book is widely available now wherever you get your books, and you can follow him at Rory Stories on all social media platforms. Thank you so much for listening, and hope you enjoy. Rory O'Connor, known as Rory Stories on social media, thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. It's great to have you, and I know you're an incredibly busy man at the moment.
Yeah, pleasure, Caroline. No, good to chat.
You have a really interesting story. I think if people just started following you and they watched your incredibly relatable takes on life, particularly if you're Irish, they mightn't realize the story that goes behind getting you to this point. It's really inspiring. You say in your book that you were described as a bit of a tick in school, which is a very Irish term. I don't know, because this audience is quite big in the UK. They hopefully will understand what that means. And you say nobody would have thought that you would have been destined for the success where you are now, where you're selling out venues, you're reaching hundreds of thousands of people on social media with your comedy. Do you ever take stock of where you've come from and where you are now?
Listen, it's a good question. And I'm kind of afraid to do that, you know. I suppose my main drive and goal is to kind of not go back to I suppose the days where I was struggling, like I suppose with a bad job and a lot of self doubt, and I was just floating around in a pond, not knowing where to go. And now I've a definite clear purpose now, which I'm very grateful to have. That I think everyone needs to have a purpose in their life in order to, I suppose, get out of bed in the morning and have something to strive towards each day. And I'm thankful, because for a long time I didn't really have that. But now I'm grateful that I came across what I was meant to do. You know, I heard something recently of the 2 most important days of your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. And, you know, and for me, I'm very thankful that I now understand why what I meant to do. Like, at least I think I do, you know.
Yeah.
Unless I realize I'm a good ballerina. Or
maybe. You can keep reinventing yourself.
I can't imagine that's going to happen. But yeah, no, I think I'm happy and content with who I am at the minute. And that's what I preach a lot online is just finding out who you are and who you want to be and what you want to do. And after that, I suppose it just becomes a little bit easier.
Do you find when you have been striving for success and you get to where you are, is there a fear that like it's all too good to be true? And that is that why you're afraid to kind of look back and or really take stock of where you are in case of, I mean, happiness anxiety is such a real thing where if we become too aware and appreciative of what we have, we're so frightened it'll be taken from us.
Yeah, yeah. I think like a lot of us, like, you know, I would suffer as well with the imposter syndrome. I think a lot of people do where you question yourself, like, am I able to do this or I'm not cut out for this? And that's a voice that I've just made part of my life now, is that negative Nelly, like in the head, that kind of tells you that you're not good enough and what are you doing this for? But I've learned to kind of just accept that voice and just not let it dictate where I want to go and what I want to do. And it's funny, Carolyn, it was only a couple of weeks ago, my wife was saying to me on the couch, she's like, sometimes I don't get you. And I was like, what do you mean? It's like the more stuff you achieve, the more you think you're not good enough. And I was like, I know, I actually agree with you. And it's weird, like, because like I'm just never happy with what I do, or I'm never satisfied. And I think it's obviously there is a plus in that because you're driven, but the negative is trying to balance that and I think anyone who is relatively successful at what they do will probably relate to that, is just that kind of I'm not doing enough, I'm not good enough, and we struggle to see what other people see. Like, other people look in at other people's journeys being like, wow, they are so successful, but the people in them shoes struggle to see that. That's something I've learned an awful lot by listening to successful people and hearing their stories, that a lot of people struggle with that, is that kind of they can't accept that they're good enough. But that's the beauty of being so driven as well, you know?
Yeah. So in among the comedy sketches that you share on your social media, there is a lot of talk and normalizing of mental health struggles, which is amazing to see. But why is that so important to you with the platform that you have?
Yeah, so I suppose people that haven't read my story or followed me online, etc., would know that Rory Stories, I stumbled upon Rory Stories by hitting rock bottom myself. So I struggled with a gambling addiction for a good few years, and it was nibbling away at my self-confidence, basically, and I just wasn't happy. You know, I was in a job that had no potential, and I always thought of myself as being stupid, because like you referenced at the start, about being that ticker, that dunce in school that doesn't understand what's going on in the classroom. And it's only now, or in the last few years, I've realized that, you know, being intelligent comes in lots of different forms. But for me, and with the way the education system was in Ireland for when I was growing up, like, if you weren't good at, you know, maths or spelling, it means you just weren't intelligent, you weren't clever. And I believed that for a long time, and that was the voice that overpowered me for a long time, thinking that I am stupid, and I failed a lot at a lot of things I'd done, and it led to me kind of hitting rock bottom and being very suicidal and asking for help and putting my hand in the air and getting the help that I needed to guide me in the right direction and give me stuff to cope with. And that's why I suppose I started Roll of Stories in 2013, and since I even had 1,000 followers, like, you know, I constantly spoke about well-being, because I genuinely don't want people to feel like I felt for all them years, where I just felt worthless and useless until I found my purpose. And I suppose when you think of Rory Stories, you probably think of the crack or whatever, but a lot of people think of, I suppose, honesty and well-being. And that show on RTE, Ultimate Hell Week, that I was on earlier this year, I suppose that came to the forefront. You know, my mental health issues was there for all the country to see it. And yeah, it wasn't ideal seeing myself in such a vulnerable position, but I suppose in a way I backed up what I'm about, like, you know, and that, like, a lot of people, especially during pandemic, might jump on the mental health well-being bandwagon because it's a cool thing to do, but it's always been part of my journey. Like, you know, I've always been on about it because it is something that's very close to my heart and something that I want to change other people's kind of mindsets regarding mental health. And that's why I talk about it a lot on my platforms.
Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning of that story then. So like, what was going on in your life? Do you mind me asking what age you were at when you started to struggle and gambling was the thing, was the vice for you that that helped diffuse some of what you were feeling?
Yeah, so I suppose from school days, like, you know, being kicked out of class and being told, like, you know, you're going to amount to nothing, and being labelled the class clown or the messer in the classroom. And I just accepted that I was stupid. That's just something I did as well. Rory, you're stupid. And I carried that. And I got through school. I'd done the Leaving Cert Applied, which I'm not sure in England what it's called, but it's not the proper Leaving Cert. It's kind of a hands-on one. So I done that. But then once I left school, I realized that I'm not good at anything you get paid to do. And I tried to be an electrician, but I have these big clumsy Mars bar fingers that are very very difficult to wire. Never mind the kind of the theory end of that. So I struggled at that. And then I ended up in a few call centers and the negative voice was very strong in my head. So around 16, I started gambling because it's just what young lads do. And even nowadays, it's worryingly acceptable that they just, you know, put on a few bets. But for me, with the addictive personality that I would definitely carry, like, gambling is not something you want to be getting into. And I suppose I leaned on gambling, Caroline, to make myself feel better. So when I was getting paid my crap wages on a Friday, I'd go to the bookies to try and double that and try and have a bit extra cash. But sure, you're only going in one direction. And this was kind of, you know, nibbling away. And I knew it was a problem, like, you know, because, like, I'd be down in the bookies, like, on a Saturday morning backing virtual dogs and horses, and you're lying to your girlfriend, you're lying to your parents. And I knew I was becoming a bad person, and there was enough people I knew in my own town that went too far, like, and lost kind of relationships and lost money, a lot of money and stuff like that. So I didn't want to go down that road. And that's why in 2013, it all just came crumbling down, and asking for help for me, like, was the only option, because suicide never is. I unfortunately had a cousin that took his life when I was only 16, and I remember the ripple effect of that. And that was enough to keep my feet on the ground and realize that, you know, taking your life can't be an option, that it's only this negative voice running rampant in your mind, and I need help. And I asked for help that night, and I rang my girlfriend outside at a casino in Dublin, and I got home and I spoke to my father the next day, and I got help with an addiction counselor, and we spoke about positive and negatives of addiction. And he basically said, you need to find something to fill your void. And comedy came into my head, because, like, as bad as I was at a lot of things in life, making people laugh came natural to me, like, from my school days in the classroom. A lot of the time when I was getting kicked out of class, it was just by telling stories and making the class laugh. And I suppose it was a gift that I was given, but I never thought of it as a potential job, because you're never told that, as you know, in Ireland. It's always like, you know, you need to go to school, you need to get a good college degree, you have to get a mortgage, you have to get a pensionable job. And if you don't do that, you know, you failed. And it took me to hit rock bottom to realize, no, this isn't the way for everyone. And hence why I started Rory Stories with a little bit of a dream and a little bit of hope. And it just completely blew up for me then over the later few years, you know.
It's incredible just what the seed of doubt, if that had been a different acorn, how different your life could have been up to this point. It's crazy that the way we think about ourselves, how that shapes our experience. It sounds like you just were self-aware enough to realize that there was a problem and go straight away and ask for help. So many people are not even aware, whether it's gambling or whether it's suffering with anxiety, which is the theme of this podcast, or any kind of difficulty, to get to the point of becoming aware of it seems to be the hard part for people. Was getting to the point of asking for help a massive deal for you? Because you sound quite comfortable with sharing your vulnerability.
Yeah, I suppose it's only comfortable now because it's coming up to 8 years since I asked for help. So it's a long kind of time ago, really. I think trial and error for me is what works. So this is what I try and tell a lot of people, is to urge people that, like, if they are carrying so much luggage or baggage inside their mind, that now if you ask for help, like, unfortunately, I can't, or I don't think any doctor or any psychologist or trained mental health nurse can tell you it's going to go away and you'll never feel down again. you will, like, but once you ask for help the first time, then you start to get a bit of help, and the professionals that are trained will start to give you a couple of tips that will help you when you start to dip. Like, so for me, my mental health is always up and down. Unfortunately, like, sometimes it can be very, very normal and okay. Other times it can be really bad. But thankfully, suicide has never really entered my mind since that day, because when I start to dip, I realize, right, I'm dipping here now. And for me, there's a few kind of pointers I do. One is I kind of delete social media off my phone. I just need to get out of that world and get back to normal, kind of olden, the glory days, as we say. And I ring someone that I haven't spoken to in a while. It doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, I'm feeling really low, can you help me? It's just for a conversation, because a conversation can help our mindset so much. Is all it takes is someone to tell a funny story, maybe about school or a holiday together, that gives you a bit of a laugh, and it automatically lifts your spirit. And then exercise is the big one. Like, exercise for me definitely helps an awful lot with when I'm struggling. Like, you know, I go for a run or go to the gym to try and clear my mind. And sometimes it works, Caroline, and sometimes I just need to grind it out. Like, sometimes, yeah, I just have to hang in there for them 3 or 4 days.
And what are those 3 or 4 days like? Is it anxiety? Is it feeling really low? What brings you to that point?
Yeah, so I suppose to sum it up would be pretty much what you said, and add in, like, self-doubt is horrendous. Like, so that negative Nelly is running right in my head. Like, I'm trying to find negativity. Like, I am sometimes, like, you know, you'd nearly want someone to say nothing negative about you, because you're just feeling really, really low and really shit. Like, and
you want to confirm the belief about yourself.
Yeah, you want to confirm that you are useless. Like, you're searching for someone. And like, when I've went in real dark places, I've often Googled my name to, I want to hear people to say that you're crap at what you're doing, you're not good enough. And it's fucking weird, like, you know. And you're going down this tunnel of negativity, and it's just so horrible. And then, like, when it does pass, say 3 or 4 days later, like, and you feel the sun shining on your head again, you're like, what was I? Why was I so down? And the amazing thing is, nothing can change in your life. Like, it's not like, you know, you get any negative news or something bad happened. There's no reason for it. It's like a switch just goes off in the head and you're like, oh no, here I am again. And I need to roll up the sleeves here and hang in there. And sometimes the cloud, you know, mightn't be, we'll say, too full of rain. And sometimes it's absolutely, like, overflowing with rain and you're just getting drowned and you're in a horrible place. And it's just not a nice place to be. But, like, I try my best to do them few pointers to get over. And when I do get over, I'm like, why was I so down for no reason? And when you're back feeling good, you feel like, I'm never going to feel down again. And, you know, I have it now. But then out of nowhere, it just hits you like a box in the nose. And then you're back to it again. And that's my life, Caroline, to be honest with you. I've learned to deal with that now. And I try my best to, you know, to stop dipping. But sometimes I can't help it. Like, I'm just free falling into a negative pit.
Would there be certain triggers? Like, if you, like, say, for example, just recently you had these shows all around the country, you're go, go, go. You've got big family at home, kids in school, kids getting sick. We were just talking about that before we were recording, dealing with normal family life. And I guess the demands on you now, like, even trying to get time for this podcast, like, would that be something that, as brilliant as the success is, it's kind of a double-edged sword?
Yeah, yeah. No, you're nail on the head. I suppose it's funny you brought it up. What I reaffirmed to myself, so for people listening that don't know, so myself and Ray Goggins, who was an instructor on the Hell Week show, we went and done a small little mini tour. We done 3 shows in Dublin, Galway and Limerick. And it was all go for that week. It was like, we'd Vicar Street on the Sunday night, we'd Galway on the Monday, we had a couple of things in between media, then we had Limerick on the Saturday. And it was a really, really brilliant week. It was just such an enjoyable week, and we got great feedback and everyone enjoyed it. And then what happened is, I had nothing planned the following week, and I was saying to myself, oh, I'm looking forward now to taking a bit of downtime. But I realised again that downtime just doesn't suit me. I'm the personality that I kind of have to be going all the time. And yeah, I had a real bad week, like, you know, and I dipped. I really did dip for them 3 or 4 days. And I just, I'm back feeling myself again this week, because I had a few things on. But for that week that I kept, I suppose, free to relax, I didn't enjoy it at all. Like, and I was in a very bad headspace, because I suppose you're on a high, like, and what goes up must come down. Like, and often, like any performers or anyone in the entertainment industry, they'll all relate to that. Like the highs are great, but the lows are horrible. And so, like straight away, I got on to my manager, and my calendar wasn't too busy in January. And I said to him, listen, I need to get busy. So we're just punching in loads of, I get a lot of requests to do school talks. Like, so I'm going to do a lot of school talks now in January, because I just realized I have to be busy and I have to have a purpose, or else I very quickly go into that negative well again, you know.
And do you feel like you're capable of relaxing?
Oh, I'm not the best person at it, to be honest with you. I really am. Like, sometimes my body and my mind tells me, and when I do, I often, up until this poxy pandemic, we would go away for a week's a family holiday for a week. And I suppose anyone who has young kids listening will know it's not really a holiday.
No, parenting in a different location.
It's just babysitting in the sun, really. Like, but what I do, I got in a good habit, is I turn off my social media for that week. Like, and that's like for me, for what I do, uninstalling social media apps from my phone makes a huge difference to me for them few days, because I'm just back to, and not like once my phone is there, like, you know, Rory Stories is on your mind and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook and all this kind of stuff. But once it's not there, I kind of just go back to being Rory, and I don't care about Rory Stories, and I just with my family, and I kind of like that. Like, I suppose I like being normal, like, you know, even though like people that have big social media followings will know that like fame kind of goes hand in hand with it. And especially now in Ireland, Ireland is a small place, and a lot of my fan base, you want to call it that, is Irish people. So no matter where I go in the country, people recognize you. And that's fine, but sometimes I don't like it. I'd like to say to people, listen, I'm just a normal fella, and you don't have to treat me any different. Like, you know, I'm just genuinely just like, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still working in a call center in Dublin. That's the way I see things. And I don't see the million followers or the 3 best-selling books or the whatever else that has come since. I don't see it. I just still see Rory. Like, and I live in a very, you know, working class housing estate where no one gives a shite about Rory Stories. And I love that. Like, you know, I the odd time they might slag me about a video, but in general, they don't care. And I love that. Like, I love that kind of normal, not being around normal people, and I don't want to be treated any different than anyone else. Like, that's the way I kind of like it. So that's why getting away, you know, to a place where like no one really knows or cares about you, it's a lovely feeling to just chill out and just go back to being normal. Like,
hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The social media thing is tricky, because like, it's such a part of a lot of people's, certainly my work, your work. I mean, it's integral to it these days, but it can be such a source of anxiety where without even realizing it. Like, you talk about self-doubt being such an issue for you. And when you share those videos, the Rory stories, and like you get all of this validation, that in a way keeps you stuck on this cycle of this loop of determining your self-worth from outward influences, which can be really like a slippery slope, like back to gambling, like you winning is validation. Or like, I feel it, like if a post does really well, like you get that dopamine hit, like you really do. Do you have to work hard to, I guess, have a solid sense of your own self-worth outside of all that? Like when you make your world smaller and you're just with your family and you're just in your house and you're going away and you've turned off your social media apps, do you feel like you have come to a place now where you do value yourself more than you did back then?
It's a really good question. And you're right, that's when I'll allow myself to kind of like I'm not, as I said, I'm not really good at one for tapping myself on the back. And I don't think many successful people are, to be honest, which we're too afraid. Because a slap in the back is very close to a kick in the arse. Like, you know, so for me, that's probably the only time. And around Christmas, like, you know what I mean? I'm not going to be a pure robot Grinch. Like, I do, like, around Christmas, I'd meet up with my friends. Well, obviously, COVID dependent, but, and I'd have a few pints. And sometimes, like, I would allow myself to be like, Jesus Christ, you are doing well for yourself. But then I very, very quickly switch back then to the game, as I call it, like, of getting, you know, getting more work done. And like, for me, if anyone says, what's your biggest fear? Like, my biggest fear is not fulfilling my potential. Like, you know, and I think it's, we all ourselves only know what we're capable of. And I spoke on that tour with Ray, with the Resilience Show, about the vision that we all have for ourselves. What people need to understand is only we see that vision. Like, you know, your mom, your dad, your best friend, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your dog, your cat, like Santa Claus isn't going to see the vision you have. And people need to understand that it is really it's you against you. Like, you know, you can't depend on anyone else to say, oh yeah, you're right, I can see that. Because when I started Roller Stars, I did have a vision. I can't say I had a vision to be where I am now, because it's mind-blowing when I think about it. But I had a vision. I was going to do well with this and I was going to be successful. And when stuff that you vision starts to manifest into your life, it really is, it's my opinion, the most beautiful feeling in the world is when you vision something and it happens. It's like, oh my God. But what it does is it gives you that confidence to move forward to the next level. And whenever this self-doubt is kicking in, just take a moment and remember that this is how I felt before my last hurdle. And I got over that hurdle, so I'm going to do it again. And
so you're building upon it all the time.
Yeah, you're building resilience for yourself. Like, you know, you're building up that kind of attitude where, listen, if this doesn't go right, that's grand, because I'm just going to keep moving forward. And that's what I taught myself. I failed. Like, people just look at the positives, but they haven't seen the amount of shows I've done where no one showed up, no one laughed. Done a book signing one year where it was like me, my girlfriend and two others, and it was embarrassing sitting there for an hour and you know, and all these things that people don't see, like, you know. And like Kevin Hart has a really great saying, he's like, everyone wants to be famous but no one wants to put the work in. Like, and it's true, like, you know, it's a grind. Like, and that's why I say to people is like, you know, if you want to, you know, chase your goals or what you've always wanted to do, just please start, because understand we're all in this game of self-doubt and imposter syndrome, and we all hear that negative voice, but we just learn not to dictate what we're going to do. And that's, I suppose, what the show was about with Ray, was that kind of letting people just see that they're far more capable of what they allow themselves to be. Like, you know, it's just a matter of taking that first step into the unknown and taking a deep breath and just really going for it, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. I just want to circle back a little bit to when you reached that point when you were gambling that you knew you needed to stop. I think for a lot of people listening where addiction might be an issue, I'm curious, how was the anxiety when you imagined giving it up? Because it must have been such a source of something that you could do every day. It gave you a sense of control, even though you couldn't control the outcome. Was the anxiety about being like, I need to let go of this, worse than the reality?
Yeah, good question. I suppose, like, with addiction, like, whether it be gambling or alcohol or drugs or whatever is your kind of your slippery slope, what I try, again, like, and like, I don't claim to be like qualified addiction counselor or mental health, I'm none of that. I just give my own life experiences. Like, so for me, you have to want to do it more than anything. Like I've so many good friends that are struggling with cocaine addiction, or they're struggling with, a gambling addiction, and they're like, Rory, what do we do? I said, listen, I can tell you what to do, but at the end of the day, you have to want to do it more than anything. And so for me, like I remember like losing money in my local bookies and coming home and genuinely punching myself in the face out of pure annoyance. But what happens is you sit down and all of a sudden you calm down, and then your mind flips back to, right, sure, I'll definitely win my next bet. And then you're back in the game again and you gamble again. And it's no different than, I said, alcohol or drug addiction. Like, you know, when you do take too much, or you drown yourself in it, it's all it takes a few days to get over that rageness in your mind, and then you're just back up on the horse again. So when it came to that time in the casino when I'd lost pretty much all I had and I was lying, I took a moment to realize that I've become this bad person. I have a 1-year-old child who's at home in a rented house. We're nowhere near getting a mortgage, and I'm meant to be her father, and I'm a dirty gambler. And that's why the suicide was strong in my head, because I just felt that I was one of these people that I never wanted to be like. And that's why, you know, asking for help was more important to me. And when I met the counsellor, like I said to him, I was like, I want to give this up and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And I'm very lucky that I found my Rory Stories, because my Rory Stories now is my fix. So that whenever I'm dipping or whatever, I write, let's make a sketch here, or let's write a story, or let's prepare some kind of project. So with addiction, you have to have a substitute. You can't just say, I'm stopping gambling, I'm stopping drinking, I'm stopping doing drugs, and then sit down and make a sandwich. Your mind is just going to go back to that voice going, oh, well, I'm off the drink now a month, I'll have 2 pints. Yeah. You might even have 7 or 8 pints, and you wake up the next day going, you know what, I've no hangover, I didn't make a show of myself last night, I have the control of this. But then, bang, a few weeks later, you're back to yourself. Same with gambling. I'm off the gambling the last, you know, few weeks or months, I'll just put a fiver bet on the golf here. What happens? The golfer wins, and then, oh, I have gone gambling. So then all of a sudden, you're back worse than ever. Same with cocaine. I only do cocaine, you know, at a wedding or at a big night out. So it's my best friend's wedding, I'll have a couple of lines. Then, oh, that was grand. Then the following week, Asher, I have control of this. Bang, you're back to where you were. So you have to decide yourself. You have to make a clear decision. Am I able to do this, yes or no? And for me, like, I'd love to go like down to Cheltenham with my friends and back loads of horse and drink all day. I'd love to do that. I'd love nothing more, but I realize that I can't stop there. You know what I mean? I just can't. So I just, it's more important. My life is more important than an addiction. So I have to kind of sway in a different direction. Like,
how did you feel, like, emotionally, physically, when, like, you were even a couple of weeks out of having gambled? Like, what was it, transformative?
Like the first few weeks are okay, because you're still so raging with yourself over like what you've done, whether it be all the money you lost or the show, you know, making the show yourself in the local pub, whatever. But it's when it passes and like you feel you're over it, and then the little kind of, Asher, I'm over it now, I'll have a little bet. So that's why you hit the nail on the head. Like, for me, addictive personalities, like, you can't get rid of that. And like Jerry said to me, but look at it as a positive. Like, some of the most successful people in the world are complete addicts. Like, you look at Katie Taylor with boxing. Like, Katie Taylor has nothing to prove to anyone regarding her boxing, but she's still constantly going back for more because she's so addicted to being successful. And like, Cristiano Ronaldo is no different. Like, did Ronaldo need to go back to United to prove himself? No, he didn't. He's nothing to prove. But there he is again, you know, doing what he does best. And that, if you were to take Ronaldo or Katie Taylor's personality towards their boxing or their football and put it into gambling or drinking, like, you know, they'd overdose and they'd lose everything they have. And that's why you have to substitute your addiction with something you're passionate about. And I was lucky to find the comedy. So, but listen, Carolyn, it's not ideal. Like, there's days where I get absolutely freaked out because I can't come up with it, with a sketch idea. And even though a million people are following you, are not waiting. Oh, Rory has done a video in a week. But in my head, I'm like, no, I need to do something. And I might rush something and I'm not happy with it, but I'll post it anyway. And it gets a crap reaction. And I'm raging with myself going, why did I do that? Because that's the addictive personality. So you're still struggling with the addictive personality, but it's a lot better making a video that bombs than going down the bookies and losing your wages. Like, do you know what I mean? So you have to accommodate, you know, meet it halfway. And that's why anyone who may struggle with addiction and has relapsed a few times is have a think, what do I enjoy doing? What would I like to do it myself?
Yeah.
And start that. And then whenever you feel you're dipping, get at that again, whether it be learning how to play the guitar or starting to exercise or do something that you've always put off because you feel you weren't able to do it. Now's the time to do it. And, like, you know, you'll surprise yourself. That's what I do with Rory Stories. Like, I completely overwhelm myself with the success of it because I was willing to take the chance and do it, you know.
You mentioned there about kind of raging with yourself and kicking yourself for having been in the situation you were in to begin with the gambling. And I always talk about self-compassion as, like, probably the most, it sounds airy-fairy, but it's been the most important tool for me. And, like, it, you know, whether it's you with the gambling or me kind of being kind to myself for the fact that, like, I'm an anxious person, I have an anxious response to things that other people might not have. Are you at a point where you've forgiven yourself for the things that you had to go through in the past?
Yeah, no, I am. Like I'm starting to get better at it. You know, and if a negative voice does enter the mind, like, I try to address it before it seeps in. So what I do is I do fict or faction. Like, so I'm like, right, this thought that's entering my head, is this a fact? Like, do I know that this person doesn't like me? Do I know that I pissed this person off? Not really. Well, then it's not a fact. It's a fiction. So get it out of your head. Like, so that's one thing that I've learned, you know, over the last couple of years, mainly, is the negative thoughts, is addressing them with fact or fiction, because we are atrocious as human beings for a little tiny issue and making it a bonfire of negativity in our head. Like, and it's trying to learn what works for you to stop that fire burning in your head when it's only, you know, it's only a spark. Like, we can often just sit on the couch and scroll through our social media and go deeper and deeper and deeper. And all of a sudden we're in a world of anxious and negativity in our head. And we done that to ourselves. Like, no one said that to us. No one put us in that position by ourselves and our negative voice. So it's trying to see what works for you, whether when you feel yourself dipping, it's throwing the phone down, just straight away getting the runners off, go for a long walk, you know, look at the cinema listings, go and watch a film, ring someone, just do whatever you have to do to kind of break that line where you're heading. But it's hard. You know, I'm not, like, I do it myself. Like, you know, I feel myself dipping and I kind of want to dip even more. And it's weird. Like,
it's kind of like you're so used to being there from the past that you're kind of find comfort in the discomfort. Like, that's what you're familiar with. And that's where you feel like you recognize that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, cause like I was told I was like I was useless when I was 9 or 10 years old in school. And I still have that voice living like paying rent in my head at the minute. And it's a nightmare. Yeah. Like, and like, I suppose when I broke down on that show Hell Week, like, a lot of people seeing, you know, Rory O'Connor there, this big, strong fella, like, showing emotions. But what is all I could see was a 9-year-old boy that was put outside the classroom that was questioning, like, why am I not good enough? And that's why, you know, I believe that, you know, education from a young age is very important, because I have very close friends, and I'm sure people do have that are listening, that, you know, they know they're good people, but they ended up going down the wrong road and they got into drugs and crime, and they might be in jail or they might be struggling with addiction or whatever it may be. And I believe a lot of that comes to being told you're not good enough at a young age and just believing you're not good enough, because it's all it takes is one influence in your life, maybe, you know, a teacher that just takes a little bit of a shine to you. And that's why, you know, like, if any teachers are listening, I hope they realize how important their positivity is on not just students who are getting straight A's, but the young lad down the back of the class who might be throwing crayons at them. Like, they're just craving attention, and they just need to be sat down and kind of get into their soul and see what's bothering them. And often there is something in there that they struggle with, whether it's something at home or something happened in the past. But I feel a lot of kids, like, you know, just need a bit of help at a young age, because they carry that baggage with them and they become alcoholics, they become drug users, they become, like, you know, involved in crime and all that. And a lot of it can be prevented from a young age. It's all it takes is a positive influence on their life. Like,
you mentioned there about Katie Taylor and Cristiano Ronaldo, like, they've nothing to prove. Why are they still doing it? Do you feel like you still have to prove something to those teachers and those people when you were younger, saying that you weren't worthy or you weren't good enough? Do you feel like that's driving a lot of what you do? And do you feel like you've proven yourself just to yourself, which is all that matters?
Yeah, you're right. It's proven to yourself that you're good enough. Like, obviously, you know, there is the voice, like, trying to prove to people. But, like, no, listen, in the last few years, like, writing my first book, what for me was the real kind of, I suppose, closing the book on the education, like, and the teachers that didn't think I was good enough, because like the fact that I'm dyslexic and I done LCA and I wrote a best-selling book for me was massive. And that was my driving force. Like when I used to get up at like 4:30 in the morning to write that book, because I felt my mind was in a good headspace. And when the voice was telling me, what are you writing a book for? You can't even spell. What was driving me on was just, no, if I can write this, I've proved to myself I'm not stupid. Like, you know, I'm after writing a book, like, and I don't think anyone stupid can do that. And that ended up leading to three books, like, do you know what I mean? I've accepted now that, like, I am good at what I do, but I still deal with the voice. Like, when the negative cloud comes, like, which I can't prevent coming, that's when it's difficult to see my positive or see my success, you know what I mean? It's when I'm struggling, like, that's when I struggle to see it. But when things are going well, and then I can take a moment and say, do you know what, you're doing all right, son. Like, if I was 16 years of age and I got to have a conversation with myself, the person I am now, like, the 16-year-old will be pretty impressed, you know what I mean? So
absolutely. You talk about just accepting that those waves are going to come. And I think for a lot of people listening, they struggle with, when it comes to anxiety, that, like, it's not about getting rid of it. And I'm always saying this, it's, for me, it was never about getting to a point where I never felt anxiety again. But like, when you do feel it, or you are in that place, when you do dip lower, it's how you speak to yourself in that moment or in those days, that's what matters. And if you can be kinder to yourself there, and you can do a couple of things there that make life a little bit easier, then the low points get easier to tolerate. They could become fewer and farther between. So what would you say to someone now who's like, I don't want to get to a point where I feel bad again? Like, it's going to happen. And what do you say to yourself when you feel that coming on?
Brilliant point. I suppose in a simple way of looking at it is, like, the stuff we say to ourselves, Caroline, we'd never say to anyone else. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we'd never go up to another human being, like, unless you really dislike them. But in general, you wouldn't go up to them and say the stuff to them that we say to ourselves. Like, so I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it is just, as you said, be kinder to yourself. So when you're saying you're not good enough, you're stupid, why, like, comparing yourself to other people, why can't you do, why can you do that? Like, we wouldn't go up and say that to our friend, wouldn't we not? So why would we say it to ourselves? So just when you are having that hammering at your own mind, just take a moment and say, would I say this to my best friend if they felt like I felt? No, I wouldn't. Well, then talk to yourself like you would speak to your best friend if they told you they felt like you do. And then you're starting to work on yourself, and you're starting to enlight a little bit of sunshine into your mind, and just remind yourself, no, I am good enough, and I am good at what I do, and people do like me. I have friends, and that's it. But again, it's difficult. I know it is. Like, it's easier said than done. But even if you can just 5% improve the negative voice, like, it's better than nothing, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think they'll certainly take inspiration from your latest book and on all the other books. And I'm sure there's many books to come. Thank you so much, Rory, for sharing so much of your story with me here on the podcast, and for just being really willing to be vulnerable. I think it's amazing, and it's normalizing what is normal for so many of us. And it takes the fear out of these very normal human experiences. And I got a lot from chatting to you. So thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Carla. And I suppose anyone listening, the main message I'll leave you with is that saying, be yourself, because everyone else is taken. So, like, if you're not yourself, you're generally going to be like someone else in the world. But if you're true to yourself and you're the person you're meant to be, you know, that for me, that's a start to being happy, is just being who you're meant to be and being kinder to yourself. So I wish everyone the best of luck, and hopefully they took something from the chat anyway.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.